Welcome to the DLF Dynasty Podcast with your hosts, Dan Myler, Ryan McDowell, and Matt Price.
Yeah, we are the DLF Dynasty Podcast. I'm Dan, that's Matt, over there is Ryan, and we are coming at you with episode 615 of the show. Just days now away from the NFL draft. We're about to learn all these landing spots, what kind of draft capital all our favorite prospects get. Speaking of prospects, we got four more of them to talk about in the rookie report, including a few of my favorite prospects in this draft. So it's going to be a fun conversation. We got a conversation about Rashi Rice coming up in the startup, and we're going to talk about some of those landing spots in our second segment as well. But first, here's the fellas. Ryan, just what are we, like 10 days now, 10, 11 days away from the NFL draft, at least the first round. I'm sure you can tell I'm ecstatic.
Yeah, I'm ready too. 10 days. It's one of the best days, best events of the year for Dynasty football fans and players. So yes, I'm absolutely excited about it. And we've mentioned before on the show that we all get together with a few others. So looking forward to that as well. Ready to go.
I highly recommend it to those of you out there listening. If you're Dynasty nerds like we are, and we think about this all the time, think about the draft all the time, get together with some people that are like-minded and share it with them, because it becomes that much more fun. I sat in a room by myself for the first like 35 years of my life watching the NFL draft every year. And I thought I was kind of the only guy that did it. And then when I found some other guys that liked to as well, it just made the experience so much greater. And you guys are a big part of that.
Yeah, man, it's a blast. Like, it's like you said, you sit there watching it, your family's filtering in and out. Like, why are you just watching people stand up at a podium and say names? That this is like what you're doing for 3 days? Yep, that's it. And we found it's good that we found, you know, a handful of people or a community that we can get together and share that with, Dan, like you mentioned.
It is so much fun. It's just so much better than it used to be. And to those that don't understand it, that's fine. Don't participate. But to us that love it, man, it is just too much fun. So we're going to talk about some of those landing spots. We'll get to those rookies as well, but let's hit the startup first.
The startup.
I don't know if everybody that watches the NFL draft plays like board games and stuff like we do, but that's a whole nother thing. Let's get to the startup. It is Rashi Rice. And if you haven't heard, there's just some drama with the second-year stud wideout with the Kansas City Chiefs. Of course, there was an accident that happened in Texas. Man, it's been 7, 8, 9 days now. It's been a little bit, and this story just continues to grow. An arrest warrant was served on Rice. He ends up turning himself in after this 6-car accident where, fortunately, nobody was seriously injured the way it sounds, although there's, you know, once Rashi's name got out there, it seems like there's some neck injuries and some things popping up from that. And this is turning into a big deal now. Dynasty managers need to take note, really. There's a potential hit and run charge that could add a big penalty to what could happen to Rashi. He turns himself in, and now we're hearing these reports, Ryan, that there's a max penalty of up to 35 years in prison. There's he's been released on bond, and the seriousness is very high. Certainly if you knew somebody, was close to somebody, if yourself was in this kind of situation, you'd be very concerned. And now dynasty managers are really at high alert, right? Red alert on Rashi and his future availability. Reports now that he was going 119 miles an hour on the freeway, and it was a drag racing incident. And really, we should all just take a moment to be thankful that nobody seriously got hurt or was killed in the incident. Rashi says all the right things. All his media availability to this point, Ryan, points to him saying, I'm taking responsibility, all these kind of things. But this is a young man that got himself over his head a little bit, is in some trouble now. And we as dynasty managers need to try to sift through all this information and make a make an educated guess on what's going to happen so we can move forward with our teams.
Yeah, always a tough spot, obviously, when you have some serious, you know, off-field issues like this. It almost feels a little dirty sometimes to think about the fantasy football or the dynasty implications of these things. And as you said, so thankful that no one was seriously hurt in this, because certainly that could have been the case. And we've seen that be the case even with NFL players in the recent past. So that's the obvious, most important takeaway here. As far as the fantasy football side, as far as Rashee Rice, you know, it seems like he's not going to be in trouble. I mean, it's so tough to say with this kind of issue. You mentioned the max penalty. There's a wide range of options and penalties for this type of incident, it seems. And you know, our buddy from Football Guys, Drew Davenport, does such a good job on Twitter covering these things. He is a defense attorney, so anytime there's those off-field issues, he jumps in and steps up and gives his professional opinion. None of the three of us really know what we're talking about when it comes to this stuff, but Drew's opinion is essentially there's not going to be a severe penalty from the NFL nor from the legal system. So I think we're probably overdoing this Rashee Rice panic.
It, as long as this is a isolated incident, that's the case. It feels like if there's anything else that comes of this, and I think Drew mentioned that in his series of tweets, that if this is the end of the story, if we've heard it all, then maybe it will go down that way. If Rashee gets into any more trouble, or if there's another twist in this case, things could deteriorate pretty rapidly. I was reading one article that said he was in this crash. Then he didn't want to provide his insurance information to anybody, didn't check to see if any was hurt in the other five vehicles that were involved in the crash, drove away. And of course his name leaks out and they find out who was involved. He is a young man. He got scared, I imagine, and just fled the scene. Since then, of course, like I said, he said, I'm taking full responsibility. He turns himself in. If everything that Drew said in those series of posts is true and things start to tilt in the way of dynasty managers over exaggerating, Matt, and you have some trades that maybe say that is what's happening, there's a maybe an advantage to going out there and trying to grab Rashee right now and getting him on your roster if there's any kind of discount.
I think it's absolutely the time to strike here. You know, I'm going to stay positive and hope that this is kind of one of those career near-death experiences that sometimes players come across, whether it's, you know, ending up on a bad team or in this case, you know, in a bad situation for probably a very frightened young man, right? Like you said, Dan. So hopefully he learns from this. But I really don't think from a dynasty standpoint, I think this is kind of a blip on the radar. Mm-hmm. We're seeing some bargain basement prices, and we'll start with the low ones here that were, you know, all of these trades were within the week, but some of these trades are just, you know, if you can get these prices at your league, you need to go do it like today, as soon as you hear this podcast. So starting at the bottom, Zamir White and the 301 for Rashee Rice, man, I really feel like Zamir White is somebody that is a player that we need to be selling right now. I know that they signed Alexander Mattison, and people are taking that like, well, they signed Mattison, so there's probably no competition coming from the draft and there's no elite running backs. But I think there's plenty of running backs in this draft that could absolutely take some rushing share for Zamir White. So to do that deal for Rashee Rice like that, whew, good job, whoever you are.
Yeah, that's the low end of the trade market. You said you had a few others on the list here that we certainly should mention.
Yeah, I'll pull those up too. We got the 212, the 312, and the 408 for Rice. That seems like a slam dunk for Rice as well. The 206 and the 306. You know, I still think I'd like to ideally pay just a single second round pick, but I'm not going to let a 306 hold up any kind of deals for me there. And then we get to some of the more reasonable ones, maybe, Ryan, here. Rashee Rice for Evan Engram. I still think I want Rice in that situation.
Absolutely.
Then we get to a first and a second in 2025 plus Trey Palmer for Rice. That one's closer. You don't really want to give up a first if you're trying to buy low based on this scenario, but that's probably closer to what he's worth, honestly, a single first in this year's draft, a little bit more in the following. And then Rice in the 104 for Addison and Flowers. I feel like I want the Rice side pretty easily on that one too.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. I might go with the other two receivers there. That's close. I'm not sure if that one's
plus Rice and Neighbors, isn't it? I mean, if it's a super flex, that's like Rice and Neighbors.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm not sure if that's a super flex. If that is, maybe that changes the equation. But you know, five out of those six trades you mentioned there are just slam dunks to buy Rashee Rice for those prices. Matt, you said it before we started the show here that you're going to go shopping for Rashee Rice. I'm going to do the same thing. Absolutely.
It really feels that way that we all should. And things could change in a week. We could see a first round wide receiver land there. Maybe that dings Rashee Rice's value or maybe his upside a little bit. Of course, Hollywood Brown is there for at least a year as well. So that's something to keep in mind. I tend to agree with you guys, though, that maybe this is a lot to do about nothing. Dynasty managers are eager to get news, and we all want to react to that news. Sometimes the best thing is to not react at all and just hold on to those shares. If you don't have Rashee, though, it's a good idea to go shopping for him because those trades do indicate there's a good deal to be had.
Dan, are we at the point where you can send Marquise Brown straight up for Rashee Rice? I kind of don't think so.
I think that's where we're at.
If you can do that, I would absolutely do that. If people are thinking that Marquise Brown is going to be the top producer, I would argue against that.
Yeah, I think I would as well. Before we get to our next segment, let's pause for some words from this week's sponsor.
It's tough to keep your New Year's resolutions, whether we're talking about Dynasty, you know, we've all got so many leagues already. Are we really going to join another startup? Can we have the amount of time to take on another league? I'm going to make more trades and be more active this season. You know, we got a lot of things going on as a Dynasty manager. And Factor is here to help you with some of your New Year's resolutions. Factor's ready-to-eat meal delivery takes the stress out of meal planning and sets you up for success in the new year. Skip the grocery stores, prep work, and cooking fatigue. Instead, get chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals delivered right to your door with over 35 meals to choose from per week, including options like keto, calorie smart, vegan plus, veggie, and more, plus over 55 weekly add-ons. You'll have a ton of nutritious and flavorful options to kickstart your resolutions. So how do you get started over at Factor? You go to factormeals.com/mostaccurate50 and use code mostaccurate50 to get 50% off. That's code mostaccurate50 at factormeals.com/mostaccurate50 to get 50% off today.
Scratch it.
Yeah, this is, we've been thinking a lot about these prospects, but we should talk a little bit more about landing spots and potential landing spots as we lead up to the draft. And Ryan, you've been doing some work on that over on DynastyLeagueFootball.com. You can find all of his work there, Matt's and mine as well. You did a recent article about five landing spots to potentially tank rookie wide receiver values. What was the general feel going into that article? And did you learn anything major as you covered those potential landing spots?
Yeah, a little bit. Just looking at some realistic situations, teams that could take wide receivers on day one or day two, and thinking about those landing spots that we don't want to see. You know, so often we see a player fall into the ideal landing spot and boost their value. Maybe they go from that second round rookie pick to a mid first, something like that. But some of these key players, I mean, we even saw it last year with everybody's rookie wide receiver one, Jackson Smith and Jigba. He gets the landing spot that is not ideal. We honestly don't really react as a community. He stayed at wide receiver one in that rookie ADP. And, not that he's done by any means, but we see how that rookie season went. So I do think that talent, obviously so important, that, you know, the entire profile that we've been covering with these rookies over the past few months is obviously very important, but we've got to weigh that those landing spots as well.
It's really difficult to kind of decipher or look at every single landing spot all in one place. So I'm wondering, when you started this article, Ryan, where did you start? Because it does feel like with every team needing at least three wide receivers to be on the field 60, 70, 80% of the time, there's a case to be made that every team could use a wide receiver, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just personally, I keep a I kind of keep an updated depth chart. There's lots of sites that do a good job with this, but not all of them. Not all of them necessarily update with every free agent move or what have you. So I during the offseason, I just kind of keep my own updated depth chart with some notes there. And I also usually share that on Twitter. So that's the starting point for me. It's kind of color-coded, looking at some obvious team needs. And a lot of these are teams that are, like I said, projected to take a wide receiver in round one or if not round two. So we're talking about the Cardinals, of course, are expected to take one. The Chargers have a wide open depth chart, at least at the top. The Patriots, the Buffalo Bills now after their recent move. So, you know, I kind of just check out that depth chart that I keep and go from there as far as teams that could use a wide receiver and are likely to take one as well.
Matt, as you think about these potential landing spots, we have all these big name wide receivers, right? At least a couple, some would say three. There's probably a case to be made that there's 5, 6, 7, 8 startable fantasy wide receivers, maybe even in year one in this draft class. So when you start thinking about the landscape of the wide receiver position and this crop of wide receivers that come in, we don't always want to think about bad landing spots, right? We always want to think about the good ones, but the truth is every year there's a handful of players at every position that landed a spot that we don't necessarily love. How do you feel about it? Does that create opportunities for you, or is that a negative for you and push those guys down the draft board?
You know, I would like to say that every single time I'm taking talent over situation, because as Ryan likes to say, you know, we're not going to have the same quarterback next year. Maybe we don't have the same coaching staff next year, and things are going to change, right? And I mean, that's true, right? But we have that same situation with JSN right now, where we have all of those things that have changed, not the quarterback necessarily, but he's in the same exact situation he was last year. And we're like, what do we do with him? Is he the JSN we thought he was? He's the JSN as he was last year. Is Tyler Lockett going to move on? Is one of them going to hurt? He's going to get, you know, there's all these question marks. And so I really do think situation is an important, maybe not for the truly elite talent on the board, that can produce in most any situation, regardless of the quarterback, those QB proof wide receivers that we're often looking for in Dynasty, right? Because they have so much stability. So there are a handful of those in this draft, but there's a lot of players in this draft, especially at the wide receiver position, that are going to be very landing spot dependent, I would argue. So I like to say that talent is the most important thing, and it is. I think situation is an extremely important part of it too, especially for the prospects farther down our draft boards.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So Ryan, let's get to this list, and you can start at the top, start at the bottom. But when you think of potential landing spots that would, as you said, tank a rookie wide receiver's value, what's one of the teams that comes to mind immediately?
Well, I also sought some input on Twitter on essentially asking this same question. What landing spots are you worried about for rookie wide receivers? And the number one answer, the most common answer, and the one I agreed with as well, was the New York Giants. They've got that early pick. They have tons of needs, have been rumored to even potentially draft a quarterback that high. We'll see how that shakes out, I guess. But wide receiver is obviously a very, very realistic option for them with that early pick. And I mean, you look at the situation, that player, if it's Neighbors, if it's Odunze, is going to have opportunity and very possible that he walks in as the top target on that team. But is that a good thing? We've got a coaching staff kind of kind of on the hot seat, certainly a quarterback on the hot seat. And as we found out over the past couple of weeks, one that might not even be ready to start the season in Daniel Jones. So, I mean, all in all, it just feels like a situation I want to avoid there in New York.
Yeah. When you think about those wide receivers with the Giants, they've all been the same for the last handful of years. We're getting those smaller prospects that seem to be more slot heavy type prospects coming into the draft. And we just keep piling these guys on top of each other. Matt, don't you think it's time to get one of these bigger bodied alpha type receivers in New York, whether the quarterback position, the coaching, all those things that Ryan mentioned, they're all valid. But if we get one of those bigger bodied receivers, do you think they have a little better chance to be successful?
I kind of do. I mean, I think it's a scary landing spot, but I think it's potentially a very good one because they, like you said, they have all these like bit pieces, right? Whether it's Wandale Robinson or Jalin Hyatt last year, these are all players, Darius Slay, and these are all players that are not alpha wide receivers. They can't lead a passing offense, right? Without just being force fed targets. Whereas if you throw somebody in there like Roma Doomsday or Malik Nabers, it's pretty clear that they're going to be the top option from the get go, and these other guys can kind of complement them. But the Daniel Jones piece is scary. The performance from last year is scary. Saquon Barkley is gone. The offensive line is still not very good. All these concerns still with the team. But from an opportunity standpoint, I think it's fine. You know, I don't think it's the worst possible landing spot, but it is a scary one.
Yeah, it's scary, no doubt. Another one that you had listed there, Ryan, is the Carolina Panthers. And while they don't have a first round pick, they have plenty of day two ammunition to go potentially take one of these top seven or eight guys at wide receiver. We all know that the being that is currently inhabiting the body of Adam Thielen is down there in Carolina. There's not a lot else. So some dynasty managers might, outside of Deontay Johnson, of course, some dynasty managers might think to themselves, wait a minute, there's room for another wide receiver, another weapon for a young quarterback. And while he wasn't great in his rookie season, there's a case to be made that Carolina could dip into that position early on. What are your thoughts on to why Carolina lands on this list that we don't really want to see a wide receiver landing at?
Well, the history for starters, I mean, this was mentioned in the article. The wide receivers that the Panthers have taken in the top three rounds since drafting Steve Smith back in 2001. It's not a great list. Jonathan Mingo and Terrace Marshall are the two most recent. Both of those obviously still on the roster. DJ Moore was the one hit. Obviously, they trade him away. And after that, Curtis Samuel, Devin Funchess, Kelvin Benjamin, Brandon LaFell, Armonte Edwards, Dwayne Jarrett, and Kerry Colbert. Not good. Not good in Carolina. You know, you throw in a meddling owner and a rough rookie season for Bryce Young, and this is another situation that I'll be avoiding for sure.
How about another team that you're going to avoid, or at least be a little trepidatious if they take an early round wide receiver, Ryan?
Well, most of these teams that we've mentioned here and the teams that show up in the article are teams that are generally bad, right? Bad offenses, maybe bad quarterback play or bad coaching staff currently, whatever it might be. The one exception there is the Baltimore Ravens. You know, traditionally a run heavy offense. I mean, this team has been top three in rush attempts, I believe, for the past 10 straight seasons. I think that's correct. So clearly they want to focus on that run game. They add Derrick Henry. We know Lamar Jackson's going to run. And even when they do pass the ball, they've got to very high level pass catchers in Mark Andrews and Zay Flowers. So it does feel like a team that will add a wide receiver to at some point. And that's not a player I'm really going to want to invest in based on the situation there.
You can get the rest of Ryan's article over on dynastyleaguefootball.com. A couple more teams that he highlighted that maybe we shouldn't be quite as excited about landing spot. Matt, just before we move on, is there a team that you're super excited about a wide receiver landing? I know Ryan mentioned these teams at the top, like Arizona and and some others that maybe that's exciting. The Chargers are in there as well. Anybody within the first 45 picks where you think if that team gets a wide receiver, let's end on a high note. What team's that for you?
I have one bad team I want to throw out too, but I'll go here first. Man, it's tough. There's so many good landing spots towards the end of it, but are they going to get opportunity? I kind of want to see somebody really fast go to Miami. You know, Tyreek Hill isn't going to be there forever. I don't think they're going to go there in the first round at 21 overall. But that would be a fun spot for one of these speedier receivers.
All right. We're going to get to the rookie report next. Let's do that now.
It's time for the rookie report.
It is time for the rookie report. Man, I can't believe we're running out of prospects to talk about, guys, because we've covered so many, but honestly, it's gone so fast. Let's start with a running back that, honestly, a lot of dynasty managers have right at the top of the list. It's Trey Benson from Florida State. Came in at 6'2", 216 at the combine. Had a, I would say, surprising 40-yard dash, sub 4.4. Looked athletic. His RAS score is a strong one for sure, Matt. And when I turn on the tape for Trey Benson, I immediately think at his size, it's really encouraging is the good word for it, that he ran that kind of speed, because it does pop on tape. There are times when you think to yourself, that's just a big bodied first and second down running back. But he has more lateral agility than most big backs that are his size.
Oh, man. I don't want to start out with the negative right now, because I'm not sure if I agree with the lateral quickness thing. For me, he runs kind of rigid and upright. And tall plus running upright is usually a bad combination, I think. And elusiveness at times, I feel, is questionable. But you know, the good stuff here, all of the good stuff is real good. It's physical, aggressive runner with, I think he has above average burst and acceleration. He runs with such good balance as well. You mentioned the speed for his size. And I think that's mostly in a straight line though, but there are times where he can just, like, he just vaporizes linebackers. Like, he just runs through them. And then he's a pretty reliable pass catcher on that. But I do have some pretty big negatives, Dan. I think you probably like him a little bit more than me. So I didn't see the consistent lateral quickness on tape, but you tell me.
Well, he wants to be agile and bounce runs to the perimeter and slide into secondary running lanes. He really wants to do that, but he's his best when he puts his head down and runs hard between the tackles. Because of that contact balance that you mentioned, you know, he sometimes take a little bit too much time behind the line of scrimmage because he wants to be Barry Sanders, but he's got Eric Dickerson's body. So those are the main negatives that I saw. I do like him. I like him quite a bit more than you, apparently. I like his ability to slide into running lanes when he's decisive. He makes quick cuts, and he seems to hit holes like as they're developing, not after they've developed, which is a big positive for me. That burst through that hole as it's being creative, runs off those blocks with a little bit more with good vision, and he's creative to create that space to make plays at the line of scrimmage. So I personally think he's right in the mix as one of these top running backs in the class. I wonder though, and Ryan, you can maybe shed some light on this. I don't always see him picked in the top as one of the top two or three running backs in a mock draft. It really does feel like those that follow this really closely are split on how we should value Trey Benson. Sometimes you see him in the early to mid second round. Sometimes he's the fourth or fifth running back in the mid third round. So that gives me a little bit of fear that maybe we as dynasty managers have overrated that combine performance, and we maybe need to take a step back with these guys' opinions.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well with Benson. But honestly, I feel like we could say the same thing with nearly every running back in this class as we as we get closer to the NFL draft, obviously the mocks are, you know, ideally becoming more and more closer to correct and you know, safer to rely on, I guess we could say. The theme I'm noticing is that Jonathan Brooks is kind of emerging as the RB1 in, not from a fantasy standpoint necessarily, although I think that will follow. But if you're looking at those NFL mock drafts, Brooks is at the top of the list. After that, it's the same thing we continue to say. It's Benson and Corum and Wright and Allen and Lloyd, and they're all kind of mixed in there together. So, yeah, I think you might see somebody that has Benson as the fourth or fifth running back in the middle of round three instead of early in round two. I'm not going to be surprised if that happens. I just think, again, there's such a wide range of outcomes when it comes to the running back position, even the top three or four.
So, Matt, what are the things that give you pause when it comes to Benson and what might limit his upside at the next level?
Yeah, I was surprised to see that you thought he has, I don't know which word you use, but good vision, great vision. I really think the vision is like the most questionable part of his game. I think he's hesitant behind the line. He's indecisive. I think he sometimes can't read the field and blocks the spatial awareness he has. He doesn't really anticipate where the space is going to be created by the line at all times. You see him missing cutback lanes. And then I don't know how much of an issue this is. Some people is going to spin it positive because he has less of a workload, but the most carries in a season he's had is 156. Is he a true bell cow back? He has the size and the speed for it. And then I do think he'd catch the ball pretty well as a dump off kind of option, but only 24 career receptions. So is that going to be a part of his game? I'm not sure. That all that said, I mean, he still is he's my running back one in the class. I don't feel like safe and like, I don't feel comfortable with it, but like, I don't want to deal with the Jonathan Brooks things right now. I don't want to have a whole season lost. It maybe he's coming back and plays week one, but is he going to be slow to pick up? Or are we going to be waiting until the fantasy playoffs for him to really pick up and hit full steam? Maybe that's fine. Like a Breece Hall last year, for example. But I just don't want to really mess with the injuries with Jonathan Brooks. So Benson has the most check marks, despite those significant issues that I have with him.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised because you do seem a little bit negative when it comes to him. I agree with you that he's indecisive at times. And when he is indecisive, he doesn't look like a starting NFL running back. He doesn't even look like a 60% type tailback at the next level. And those are the things that are going to give you pause. And maybe that's what some analysts are seeing and pushing him down the board. But when he does make decisive cuts and cut behind those blocks, he looks like a Breece Hall type runner at times.
If you give him a gap scheme where he makes one cut and just goes and like doesn't have to think about where he's going, I think he's going to be fantastic. I think he could be a 1,200 yard back. So we have to, again, landing spot dependent, right?
Yeah, and that contact balance is what's going to be his calling card. I wrote down so many times, he wants to be elusive. He wants to be more elusive than he is. And, you know, he bounces cuts or hesitates in the backfield waiting for the big play when really putting your nose down and go getting the 4 or 5 yards that are blocked. That's really the thing that he should do more often. I also have him in my top two. I think he's a guy that could move up into the first round in rookie drafts after the NFL draft if things break his way. Ryan, I wonder where you're seeing him. Does he have that kind of upside? Could he jump into the first round, or is he dead set on being a second rounder for all of us in Dynasty?
I think he definitely could get into the first round. In fact, he's already there, according to our one quarterback ADP. In that data, he is the RB1, 10 overall in that rookie draft ADP. If you switch over to Superflex rookie ADP, and this just shows shows what that class is like. He's the RB2 in that data set and 16th overall. So that's kind of where we're looking at him right now with a good landing spot. He's a late first rounder. With a poor landing spot, or if he falls further than expected, then yeah, we're talking about Trey Benson as a mid second rounder.
Let's move on to our next prospect. It's wide receiver Ladd McConkey, who comes in Came into the draft process, I would say, as a little bit of an unknown to many. I was actually a pretty big fan of the Georgia product. 6'1", 186, and really looked good throughout the bowl season and certainly at the NFL Combine. Ryan, I wanted to start with you. When it comes to Ladd McConkey, I wasn't there. I wasn't able to listen to him speak directly, but I caught some of what he spoke to the media about. And Ladd McConkey is a pretty impressive dude.
Yeah, very impressive, you know, very well-spoken. I guess I would disagree a little bit with how you introduced him there. I don't think necessarily he was an unknown. I mean, obviously he played for Georgia, won a national championship there. I think just overlooked is probably the better word.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a college football fan, you know the name. He was productive for those really good Georgia teams, national champion Georgia teams. But even watching tons of SEC and watching Georgia every chance I got, I never really thought of him as a strong NFL prospect. And so I do think the combine changed that for a lot of people, myself included. But yeah, he was impressive in the media session, impressive on the field for the drills as well. Really, he just really stressed the versatility in his game. He could play inside or out, was not only willing but eager to play special teams, talked about how he wanted to be an NFL punt returner and his desire for that. So yeah, again, just super impressive kid.
And those kind of things, you mentioned the punt returner, those things show up on tape when you watch him both before the catch and after the catch. He's a strong route runner. He runs crisp routes and he looks really good at the top of those routes with those, especially in breaking routes. He has enough speed to keep the safety over the top, I would say. In fact, he made some plays that were a little bit surprising to most, certainly surprising to me. And then again, after the catch, especially on short to intermediate routes, he turns into that kick returner. He has good vision. He knows when to cut back and use leverage against an oncoming tackler that's chasing him. Those things pop up all the time. Matt, when you watch Ladd McConkey and try to like project his ultimate upside, where do you think that lies?
Ultimate upside. I feel like he's a very safe player, but I'm not sure what the ceiling actually is. I think he's probably like a ceiling is somewhere in like the upper wide receiver two range, like where he could settle on if he wanted to average out his career. But that's okay. Like I don't think he's ever going to be a top five wide receiver, but I think he's right there in that, you know, 15 to 20 kind of range. I think he could fit in there. He's so good at beating the zone, right? And today's NFL, where it's like, seems like 75%, 80% of the defensive scheme is zone coverage to take away that huge deep ball, right? That a lot of teams like to play with. And McConkey's going to exploit that underneath. You line up in the slot against a linebacker or nickel defender, and he's just going to shred the middle of the field on those slants and drags and middle posts and things like that. He gets up to speed quickly. He gets off the line of scrimmage real quick. And he's so tough as a runner too. He absorbs these massive hits, just bounces off, something impressive for his size at 187 pounds. And then I think I mentioned reliable already, but 76% catch rate. So, yeah, he's a really fun player, reliable hands. He knows how to establish body position. He, his footwork is really great. He can make defenders miss and get off balance, like just with his footwork off of the line. So, really, really fun player. Negatively, Dan, I don't know. What do you see negatives? I have a couple, but, there's not a whole lot.
Well, I think the negatives aren't like glaring, right? They're not those things that make you say, oh, I can't take this guy. He drops way too many passes, or he can't create any separation. All the negatives that I had written down, and I only had a few, were relatively small. I don't think he's great at tracking the ball over his shoulder. There were multiple times where he gets that step on the deep route, and it's almost like he loses a step because he's looking straight up over his shoulder and doesn't track it very well. So that's a pretty big negative. That's something that will come into play for him, because if he's going to take the top off the defense at all, and I think he needs that threat in his game, at least to some extent, that could become a, become a pretty big problem down the road. He also has struggled with injuries. Certainly did this past season. He had that ankle injury that kept him out, and certainly limited that his ability at times this past year. So I think those are probably the red flags that most NFL teams see with him, and that lack of true game-breaking speed might create a problem against super fast corners. What is it that holds you back from giving him any kind of grade above just good?
I think the speed is good. I think the speed is fine, but I think he's pretty terrible in contested catch situations. You know, I mean, that's not going to probably be part of his game, but I think he's really bad on that. I do think he can play outside, but any kind of those contested catch situations is going to be a concern for him. And then, you know, he's just off the field a lot. And I guess that's maybe just a product of that Georgia offense, but that wrecks his production metrics. But his per target efficiency metrics are really good. I think 3.26 yards per route run, which is top six number in the class. But from a complete volume standpoint, from production, looking at him, and you know, he's playing with Brock Bowers and A.D. Mitchell for a time, and some other players that have gone through. But you would like to see more production from him, you know, for this highly drafted of a prospect, for somebody who's being talked about in the first round.
Yeah, there is some first round buzz, Ryan. You see his name mocked towards the end of the first round, especially. I mentioned the Chiefs is a potential landing spot for a wide receiver. I've been seeing that one. The McConkey to the Chiefs landing spot at 32 more and more as we approach the NFL draft. So, you know, is he a guy that could move in dynasty rankings and move up draft boards as we enter fantasy draft season?
Yeah, he's already been moving. Actually, we've seen his ADP go up since the combine. He's the wide receiver 7 in both of our data sets, both single quarterback and super flex in those one quarterback leagues. He's going off 9th overall. So the wide receiver 7, 9 overall, just outside the first round in super flex leagues. But yeah, if he shows up as a late first rounder, then I think we could see him potentially climb even higher. If you look on Mock Draft Database, his projection is 33 overall. So obviously right on the border there. Ironically, 33 would be the Carolina Panthers, one of those teams we want to avoid, as we talked about earlier. And I guess that, you know, that's kind of the scary part is you look at that late first round. There are a couple teams that would be, I think, negative spots. The Chiefs obviously would be a good one, despite Rice and Brown already there.
The next wide receiver we need to talk about is Javon Baker, the Central Florida product. Currently 41st overall in our DLF consensus rankings at wide receiver 21. He, of course, is a transfer from Alabama and didn't get many opportunities there, but certainly made the most of his opportunities, Matt, when he got to Central Florida. He had 52 catches for 1,139 yards and 7 touchdowns in his final season on campus. Impressive average of 21.9 yards per reception, and ended up at the Senior Bowl where he had a pretty nice week and kind of jumped onto the radar for dynasty managers everywhere. Certainly was a guy that I was watching that week. And now I have him ranked about where everybody else does. I think he's a fringe third round rookie pick. And that's something I wouldn't have been able to say pre Senior Bowl.
Yeah, I need to update my rankings. I have him at wide receiver 11 right now. I think I liked him quite a bit more than I thought I would. You mentioned the Senior Bowl. Like, he was just destroying players in those one-on-ones off the line. He gets off the line quick with the variety of release moves, strong at the catch point, 56.3 contested catch rate. He's got vertical skills, the ball tracking skills. He's got that body control to get those feet down in the end zone, a large catch raise. Someone said he has the wingspan of a 6'6" man at 6'1". So you got to like that. So he can make those catches outside of his frame. He high points. He shows those late hands that we like to see from really savvy veteran receivers. And he just plays real strong. It varies his route tempos. It's like he picks out the defender's weaknesses and attacks them. That's how I like to say it. So yeah, he uses the vertical game to set up those intermediate routes. So I really like this player. There's definitely some negatives here, Dan, but I liked him a lot more than I thought I would.
Well, he's really good at making catches on inaccurate throws, right? He has those quick hands.
Yeah, adjusting those, yep.
Yeah, you mentioned the body control, especially on the boundary and at the catch point when he has to go up and get it. That those are all the things you hate when you see a 6'1", 220, or I think he's about 205, something like that. These guys that have that like ideal frame, they don't play like big receivers. He is made to play the X role. He plays that receiver spot well. I think there's a little bit of like elite upside with Javon Baker that exists where he could be just an alpha receiver and hog targets and become one of those guys that we all depend on week in and week out. There are some negatives though, Matt, as you mentioned, and you know, I'm wondering because there's been players like him who come and go, and especially from smaller programs. He of course did come from Alabama where there was a, you know, maybe we thought there was elite upside when he was either a 4 or 5 star, I can't remember. But he doesn't have that like elite get off at the line of scrimmage that, you know, it takes him too many steps to get to that full speed from time to time. And I wonder if that's going to hold him back to create that separation on short to intermediate routes, because he's not as effective at the line of scrimmage right at the snap than he is at the catch point, which tends to hold some guys back from time to time.
Yeah, I see him as somebody who has kind of early speed, like, but they can catch up with them, like down the route. So it's almost every catch down the field, like the defender is right there with them, you know. So like he beats the man off the line, and then he doesn't have that top end speed to really keep that vertical separation going. He still makes the catch generally with that catch rate, 56.3 contested catch rate. So he's going to catch those 50-50 balls in general, but. Yeah, like there's just always a defender in his back pocket, so he has separation issues. Lots of steps when decelerating, especially you see, he rounds off those breaking routes. So he's a developmental route runner for sure. And then the catch rate, not super great. Overall, 61% catch rate. He has 13 drops over the last two seasons. And then after the catch, only seven missed tackles forced, which was tied for 232nd in college football.
But again, that was what you're talking about. He's not a guy that runs away from people. He gets caught after the catch regularly. Right. And that's something that's going to hold people back.
So the ceiling,
love that killer instinct though. He's got the killer instinct to go get the football all over the field, whether he's on the perimeter or on an in-breaking route. And that's something I always look for, but the things that hold him back, keep him from being more than a third round pick. For me, our ADP suggests he's going to land in that range, Ryan, whether it be super flex or single quarterback. Is there upside for him to move into the second round in rookie drafts?
I think there is. 29 overall in that single quarterback ADP, wide receiver 16, and it really does feel like he's going to be a day two pick.
It does.
Again, based on the mock draft database, 95 overall, PFF has him ranked 76th overall. If he's a day two pick, and certainly if he sneaks into the end of round two, then he is going to be a dynasty rookie riser for sure, likely getting into that second round.
Is he a guy you like, Ryan? Is he a guy you'd be targeting right now before knowing his landing spot and draft capital?
At his current value, absolutely. I mean, he's a guy I would want in the third round. I'm a little bit, if we see that value jump, I'm a little bit concerned for exactly the reasons you guys were pointing out there at the end of that discussion. Again, looking at PFF, open target percentage open target percent of his targets, 37th percentile there. Obviously not great among the class. And then separation percentage versus single coverage, he's in the 55th percentile there. Not great. And that's the concern, you know. Can he get open? And we see that. I feel like we see that as a trend with why these players struggle when they get to the NFL. And, you know, even some of the top receivers. I mean, going back to guys like Laquon Treadwell, why did he bust? Because he couldn't get open.
Couldn't separate.
And maybe that's a Javon Baker thing too, although he did show at times that he can get wide open from time to time as well. Our last prospect for this week's episode is one of my favorite prospects in the draft. I came around to Tyrone Tracy early on in his career. He played at Purdue, of course, Big Ten fan here, but didn't realize, kind of like you were saying with Ladd McConkey, Ryan, that he was that big of an NFL prospect until I started seeing some tweets and stuff and had to go back and start watching Tyrone Tracy a little bit more. And like I said, he's one of my faves. He's a guy who really showed well at the combine, 4.48. 40-yard dash and had a vertical jump of 40 inches, which is in the top 5% over the last 20 years for running backs. The three-cone drill looked great at 6.81, 20-yard shuttle, 4.06, high marks there as well in his broad jump, 10 feet, 4 inches. To say the least, his RAS score is very, very good. He's as good a receiver as he is a running back, and that's not slighting him between the tackles as a runner. He dips and jukes in running lanes as good as any draft or any running back in this draft. Very hard to tackle, has great contact balance, snaps cutbacks, and has a nice spin move that I really like. Also, that jump cut behind the line of scrimmage to find the secondary running lane is as good as anybody. He's a good kick returner, and that shows up, especially as a pass catcher. He caught passes at Purdue and really looks like more than just a screen and dump off guy, a guy that could potentially move around the formation and maybe even run routes down the field. Although that wasn't a huge part of his game in college, he did show it from time to time. I don't know if he's like a lifelong running back. He doesn't look like a lifelong running back. He looked almost like he's learning the position from time to time. Reminds me a little bit of, gosh, I'm drawing a blank on his name. Rookie last year, got drafted by the Titans. Spears. Reminds me a little bit of Tyjae Spears. And that can be seen as a good thing and maybe a negative as well. The thing about it is Tyrone Tracy is a sixth round NFL draft prospect, a guy that's going to go on day three, no doubt. And I think if he lands in a spot where he has a path to touches early on, he could be a difference maker for dynasty managers. I could see him in a role where he's touching the ball 12, 14 times a game. And as we all know, that can churn out RB2 type numbers. Matt, I don't know if you're a Tyrone Tracy guy. I certainly am, obviously.
I like a lot of things about him. I don't like everything, but I like a lot of things. You mentioned the pass catching. I wanted to look up how long he's been playing running back positions, but I forgot. But he is a wide receiver.
This is it, guys. He played running back exclusively just this final year? Season at Purdue.
Okay, that's what I thought.
He was a wide receiver before that.
Yeah, so he knows how to catch the ball, 110 career receptions. You mentioned the three cone. I love that. 4.44 yards after contact per attempt is really good. The first note I wrote down, Dan, was what you said. He's just got a killer jump cut. That jump cut behind the line of scrimmage that he does to get to that second level, and he's just so slippery. Once he's out there, he understands angles of pursuit. And if you could give his vision as a runner to Trey Benson that we talked about earlier, you'd have Trey Benson mm-hmm. would be drafted much higher amongst this class. So yeah, but the bad things, Dan, like, man, I don't think it matters. I really don't, but he does not look like a running back. He looks like a wide receiver trying to carry the ball between the tackles. Those legs are just so small, but clearly he's powerful with the testing. He just looks tiny from that stuff. He looks like a wide receiver that doesn't run behind his pads. And sometimes I question the play strength. But I mean, he's really good at being a shifty pass catching running back. So he's in right up my wheelhouse for that. The other thing, 6 year senior, that's a lot of football.
Yeah. Older prospect certainly not a guy that we're going to be looking at 6-7 years down the road as a guy that we're probably counting on. But you mentioned, Ryan, that this was it. This was the running back year. Even at Iowa, though, and he started his career there, of course, way back in 2018, he was the jet sweep, jet motion type guy with the Hawkeyes. So he always had that skill set, and he finally flipped over. I think it was actually in 2022. He did play a little bit of running back for Purdue once he moved over there in his 2022 season. I'm trying to pull it up here, and it's just not coming. 17 carries. for 138 yards, also had 28 catches. But this past year, wasn't the full-time runner, just 113 carries, but you mentioned the yards after contact, Matt. He was a guy that if he got just a half a step on somebody, that spin move, that jump cut, that was gonna create problems for defenders. He's a slippery runner. That I think translates to the next level. Forced tackles missed, yards after contact. Those are the things we really want to see, because the running backs that get what's blocked for you, that's great. What can he add after that? What can he put on top, and can he create big plays off of it? Scored those 8 touchdowns in his final year with the Boilermakers, and just looks like, to me, I know you mentioned it, I mentioned it as well, he doesn't always look like a running back. I don't think it matters to me. He really does look like a guy that can score fantasy points for me, even if it is for a few years. Ryan, is he a guy that you're in on, or are you waiting to see on him?
Again, at the price, I'm certainly interested. We're talking about, as you already said, Dan, a day 3 pick in the NFL. And I mean, when we get down that far with these prospects, it's tough to project if he'll be a 4th rounder or a 6th or 7th rounder. We actually don't have a dynasty ADP on him. We, as most of our listeners know, probably rely on MFL, my fantasy league, for that, to collect that ADP. He's actually not even in the system yet. So hopefully we'll get him in there, because he is going to be a guy we want to grab with those late 3rd or 4th round rookie picks.
You need to send them an email, Dan. Send MFL an email right now.
Yeah. Get him on the Tyrone Tracy train. He was a Boilermaker. See what I did with her? So we got one more show before the NFL draft. We're going to cover 4 more rookies. That'll take us right into draft week. We're going to try to get one more mock draft in before we get say hello to these landing spots here in about a week and a half as well. So that's going to do it for this episode. For Ryan and Matt, I am Dan. Thanks for listening to this episode of the DLF Dynasty Podcast. We'll catch you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the DLF Dynasty Podcast. Please remember to rate and review and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.